You're listening to Rock at Night. Rock at Night, here I come, babe. Rock at Night, just to get some pay. We're ready to love, I'm only this time. A night, a night. Right.
This is Charisse with Rock at Night magazine, and today I am here speaking with Glenn Page of the UK band, the Lynn Price Three. We just reviewed recently Emily's Shop, so we're going to talk about that. But the main thing I wanted to talk about is you've got me hooked on your music, Glenn. I mean,
oh, thank you.
2 weeks solid, I've been listening to the last 20 years of your discography.
Have you've just recently discovered us?
I just recently discovered you guys, and I mean, I've been into kind of the mod music for a while. I do kind of cover bands. I think the first mod band I covered over there was a decade ago. There was a band named Lois that I remember speaking to. They're around York. I'm just so intrigued with you guys. First of all, for people that don't know about your music, it's very retro 60s garage rock mod, some psych. How would you describe your music?
Yeah, I tend not to get too hung up on, on categories. I let other people make their decisions on that, really. I mean, the stuff that you just mentioned probably nicely encapsulates, the music that certainly I like, and I guess that would go for the other two guys in the band as well. And when we kind of set out to do this band, we were just sort of trying to do sounds that we liked, so that was bands from the 60s like the Kinks, the Who, the Beatles, and also punk, so the Clash, the Undertones, the Ramones in particular. Yeah, and I suppose we wouldn't even necessarily describe ourselves as a mod band. We're a band that I guess mods like, and we certainly see lots of mods at our gig. But we don't ride around on scooters, and we're not sort of walking around in sort of two button suits or anything like that. But we do have that kind of 60s kind of aesthetic, I suppose.
I think aren't you playing at a mod festival in August?
Yeah, we get booked at mod festivals quite a lot. Yeah, it was a funny thing. It was probably about 10 or 15 years ago. Lots of mods started coming to our shows. Before that, not so much. Well, in fact, prior to that, we were mainly playing kind of like garage beat weekend type things. So it was a bit more that kind of garage 60s psych sort of scene. But yeah, we do get a lot of mods now, but not only mods, but mods are very keen on their music, aren't they? So they're great people to get into your music because, they're going to be engaged with it.
The songs are very humorous, very cheeky, I notice. And you write a lot about local people, things having to do with Kent and Medway and all that. And about people, like I saw Billy the Quid. You want to talk about Billy the Quid?
Yeah, sure. Billy the Quid is a legendary figure in the Medway area where I live, and he's been around a long time. But he kind of likes to stop people in the street in Chatham and ask them for a pound. So a quid is old English slang for £1. So he became known as Billy the Quid, and he's just a local legend, really, local character. But I do write about people. I write about stuff, around here, because it's kind of what I know, I suppose. If I think, the music that all the music I like, I think wrote very much about, the people wrote music about the things around them. So it's, like the Ramones writing about people and the New York scene, or, old blues guys like Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker writing about what was going on around them, in their life, so it's just that, really. It's just, writing about what you see and what you feel.
Well, is Mr. Gray someone that you know? Because I noticed there's Mr. Gray, there's Lisa Baker, there's a lot of songs about people.
Yeah, they're all
your granddad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're all real people. Yeah, Mr. Gray was about an old neighbor of mine. It was he was just completely devoid of a sense of humour, and was just a very serious person. And He just, yeah, I there was just no humor, no kind of warmth, and I used to just really feel for his wife and his son. But yeah, maybe he's cheered up now. I mean, I've not seen him for a very long time.
He might be gone.
Even, yeah, hopefully not. I like to think that there's a happy ending at the end of a story, even if there isn't in the song,
Who's Lisa Baker?
Lisa Baker is so when I was a teenager, it was someone I had a crush on, but she was a very naughty girl, and yeah, so I've kind of the lyrics of that are slightly masked, I suppose, to kind of, protect the innocent. But yeah, she's a very interesting character, and I bumped into someone not that long ago who's still in contact with her, and apparently she's still just as wild. So yeah, which was good to hear, So long live Lisa Baker.
One catchy song that's been in my head for 2 solid weeks is Praying Mantis.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've been playing that on the ukulele.
Oh wow. Okay, I'd like to hear that.
Yes,
You
B flat
play
minor.
it over.
Actually, a lot of your songs I've been playing, Man Out of Time, I've been
Okay.
playing that.
Man out of time. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that one.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, and a couple other ones, but yeah, I just been figuring out the chords and stuff, and
Yeah.
it just they're real catchy. Oh,
Oh.
London Institute,
London Institute, yeah.
Key of A. Is that's a science museum? Tell us about London
Yeah,
Institute.
that's quite an interesting one, how that song came about, because I wrote it after having a dream, which in turn came after I'd had a conversation with my late grandfather about the stuff in that song. So my grandfather told me this story about how when he was a boy, so I suppose we're talking, this would have been back in the 19, we yeah, like back in the 1920s, early 1930s, something like that. So him and his uncle, he went cleaning windows in various places in London with his uncle. His uncle was a window cleaner, obviously. And he told me this story not long. My grandfather told me a story not long before he died, where his uncle had taken him to this sort of science institute, and I can't remember the name of the place, but it's called, obviously it's called the London Institute in the song. Maybe it is called the London Institute of something. But he told me that his uncle took him to this room, and there were all these jars with these kind of, like dead babies in, essentially, sort of, various mouthful
Oddities,
orders.
oddities. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it obviously left quite a mark on him, because he was sort of telling me like it was something he'd been carrying around with him for a long time, and he found it really disturbing. So he told me this story, and I kind of, it's obviously the sort of thing that sort of sticks with you. And I had a dream that same night, and in the dream, I sort of was in this room, and I saw the babies in the jars kind of climbing out and jumping down onto the floor and running down the corridor. So the lyrics of the song kind of reflect that, and the third verse really is the dream sequence. But I suppose there's a kind of liberation there as well. They're kind of escaping
Well,
and
I
moving on to.
figured you were fearful because you say, I cry, I cry, I cry.
Yeah.
You know, like you're terrified
Yeah,
because of
exactly. For
all
most of,
the
yeah,
freaky
I think,
things.
yeah, maybe that's sort of also reflecting, my granddad's account as well. It's all a bit of a mashup. But it's interesting that that song, that's quite a live favourite for people coming to our shows. And I remember when we recorded it, thinking, well, the opening line is 200 dead babies lined up in jars. And I was thinking, who's going to like a song like this? But we did it anyway. And then, but it's kind of, yeah, it's just weird how these things go. It's obviously quite dark, but seems to be quite a popular live favourite.
The subject matter is dark, but the melody is happy.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's
Yeah.
lively, and it's
Yeah.
easy to sing along, and it's real catchy.
Yeah. Well, I also think that some of our songs, the lyrics, can be quite depressing, set to, cheery tunes or the other way. But I think, I don't, without wishing to get too deep, different experiences in life, I often think that kind of sadness or, bad feelings go alongside the happy, cheery ones at the same time. Do you know what I mean? It's not often that you have things that are
Right.
kind of compartmentalized. I can think of going through difficult times in my life with, relatives, I don't know, being terminally ill, for example, and then but having laughs along the
Reclusive.
way. I was worried I'd upset the dog there with all the, the talk about the dark lyrics, but there you go.
Babies lined up in jars at the London Institute. Indexed and filed with a reference card at the London Institute. Cleaning windows with my Uncle Bill at the London Institute. The Charing Cross line back to Stroud feeling ill at the London Institute. In the name. A catalogue of errors in biology at the London Institute. Curious examples of deformity at the London Institute. In the name of science. In the name of science. In the cold grey summer when I was young, I wanna run home and tell my mum. In the cold grey summer. Round the London Institute. Going down the corridor and straight at the stars. At the London Institute. Brought back to life by the National Health. At the London Institute. Swam off formaldehyde and jumped off the shelf. At the London Institute. In the name of science.
So many questions. Of course, your music sounds like it could have been on the radio in the 1960s. When you record, do you use vintage amps and vintage instruments?
Yeah, so we certainly use vintage amps and some vintage instruments. They're not all vintage, but the amps are, the drum kit is, the bass guitar is, the guitars aren't usually. But we might occasionally wheel out an old Hammond organ or something like that as well. So yeah, we do use a lot of old vintage equipment, and then we spent up until really the last couple of albums two or three albums, I guess. We recorded everything on tape, so we've always had that kind of, that sort of, well, again, that sort of 60s aesthetic, I suppose, because those were the sound we liked. And then in recent years, we've used digital recording because it costs an absolute fortune to do stuff on tape now. But we still apply the same approach. So it's not like we're kind of, recording the drums, then the bass, then the guitar, and syncing it all up on Cubase or something like that. We record it live as you would do if you were doing it in the old school way, with tape. So yes, yeah, so we've got that. And the guys that we work with, there's a studio in Medway called Ranscombe Studios, which is quite popular, run by a guy called Jim Riley. And lots of people are recorded there. Billy Childish always records there. People like James Taylor Quartet and Grand Day, people like that from The Prisoners and so on. So he's got that feeling for the music and that sort of style of production. And that was sort of really where we found our sound, actually, because back in about 2003, we went into Jim's studio for the first time, and we recorded a song called Last Hotel, which ended up being our first album. And that was the moment where we kind of thought, that's it, that's the sound, that's what we want, that's what we want to sound like. But yeah, he was the first person that really kind of helped us to kind of plug into that sort of, get that kind of sound, really.
I notice, of course, the style you have, the harmonies that are very retro. The drummer sings, which you don't see that very often. And your lineup, you've had the same trio for 20 some years. I presume you're all good friends. That's unusual.
Yeah, we've known each other a long time. In fact, I've known Neil for getting on for Neil the drummer. I've known him for getting on for 30 years now. So we used to be in a band in the mid-90s together, called the Wogans, and then we kind of split up and did other things for a bit. And then it was through Neil that I met Steve, the bass player, and we did our first gig in 2001, I think, and first album out in 2005 by the time it was released. But yeah, I think we've been for a lot together. We've been together a long time. A lot of experiences along the way. I mean, we when we started out, I mean, it's a wonder we carried on after our first gig. Our first gig was an absolute disaster. Steve forgot a lot of the songs. I had two guitars kind of malfunction. Yeah, it was kind of horrible, and we kind of weren't really sure if we were going to carry on after that. But obviously, we did. And then what followed was about 2 or 3 years of playing lots of gigs to kind of, two people here, three people there, nobody, And then things just kind of slowly picked up. But that was kind of our kind of Hamburg, Beatles in Hamburg period, because we were doing maybe two, three gigs a week, albeit to, one, two, three people. But I do think that helped us be what we became, because we were kind of, working quite hard and working on our sound. And it's hard to imagine playing in a band with anyone else now, to be honest, because I think we've just got a kind of a natural feel for how we do our thing, so I'm not, it would probably feel like cheating on your wife or something playing with someone else. It'd be a bit weird.
No, I think it's wonderful that you guys have stayed together all this time and you've evolved. I mean, look at all the albums you've put out. And most recently, you have the 7-inch vinyl, which is pretty retro in itself. Let's talk about Emily Shop, the new single that's based on an old kiddies TV show, I guess from the 70s.
Yeah, it's a big part of my childhood. That was a TV show called Bagpuss, and the concept of the show was some old toys that lived in a what was essentially an imaginary shop, which was sort of looked after by a little girl called Emily, who never actually appeared in the shot in the show, only in photos. And people would find, pick up old items, lost and found, and they take them to the shop, and then the toys would fix them up and make them, ready to go back to their owner. And yeah, I mean, crazy, really. But it left a big impression on me, really. It was something that left such an impression. I was able to share it with my own kids, as they were growing up, and they really liked it. But it was also made, the TV show was actually made not far from where I live. There was a guy called Oliver Postgate who made it. In Kent, which is, yeah, it's maybe like 30 miles down the road or something. It's just got a lovely old English kind of feel to it, and it's very, very comforting to me. So I went through this phase when I was writing songs for this album. I was trying to write a few songs about things from my childhood that left a mark, and there were other TV shows I wanted to write about, but this was the only one that came out kind of any good that I was happy with.
I looked it up on YouTube. There's episodes there, and it's stop motion
Yeah.
animation with like real stuffed animals and stuff like that. There's
That's
a
right.
cat.
Yep. That's right,
And
pussy.
I mean, nostalgia is kind of the central theme of your music. When did your parents listen to a lot of the 60s music? Is that
Yeah,
what
so my,
influenced you, or?
yeah, 100%. So my parents were very much children of the 60s. So my dad was very much a Beatles person. My mum was very much a Rolling Stones and kind of old rock and rollers type of person. So I grew up with those records in the house. I can't really imagine, I can't really remember a time when that music wasn't there, if you know what I mean. And it's sort of, it's like part of my DNA in a way. And there are other things like a story I often tell about the moment where I thought I want to play the guitar, I want to do something with music was, and this is all in the kind of pre-internet age, right? So I remember having a chat with a boy at school when I was probably about 13, maybe a little bit old, 13, 14, that sort of age. And we were talking about the music of Chuck Berry, this was in the day, you couldn't just, I had one little record shop, where I lived, and it wasn't like you could just go in and get all of Chuck's back catalogue. It's more complicated, you remember.
I
So
do.
remember having a chat with this friend about Chuck Berry, and I was like, really, I've heard about this guy, Chuck Berry. really want to, hear his music. And he told me about his dad had some old 78s, the old 78 records. So he did me a cassette of Johnny B. Goode, Run Rudolph Run, and Roll Over Beethoven from his dad's 78s. And I remember playing it on a little boxy kind of tape machine. Put a cassette in, hit play, and the kind of the hiss and the kind of crack that was coming. Some really like old and well played records, and then sort of the riff from Johnny B. Goode opened up, and it was like being struck by lightning. It's like kind of like everything kind of came alive, and I thought this, that's what I want to do. That's just the most amazing thing that I've ever heard or felt. That's maybe it's more a feeling than a.
Chuck Berry is who influenced the Beatles. I mean, all that early 50s rock, rockabilly blues and all that. So
And then, of course, there were similar moments after that. As I say, the Beatles had always been there, but I think there was certainly a time when I was about not that long after that, actually, where I remember being off school sick. I think I'd had the flu or something, and I just decided to start playing all the Beatles records track by track, like literally every one. And I was amazed, because obviously, Ticket to Ride, Hard Day's Night, things like, all the big hits were there, but like just delving into that, the depth and the richness of the kind of back catalogue, it just blew my mind.
I'm picking up from your music a lot of Kinks, a lot of early Who, and even Small Faces, because I love Small Faces.
Love all those. Yeah, great band. Great band.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Now, you guys have been over to the States. I think I read you went to South by Southwest.
Yeah,
Tell
we
me about your
played.
visits here.
There haven't been that many of them, so it's easy to do. So our first visit was in 2006, and we got a gig at South by Southwest, and on the way there, we stopped off in New York to play a little gig in Greenwich Village, and there were only about three people there. You know, one was my wife, another one was an old university friend of mine who still does live in the New York area. And the other one was Stephen Van Zandt, and so he'd been playing our record, our first album at the time. So he came down, and that's how we got to be on Wicked Cool. You know, sort of he came along to sort of have a chat with us. So that was, that was good fun. And then the trip to South by Southwest was great too, because we got to play immediately before Susanna Hoffs and Matthew Sweet it was at the time. But yeah, you know, we were really
Bangles, yeah.
growing up. So that was a great trip. And then it was years before we, oh no, we did have one other trip about 2 years after that while we were with Wicked Cool the first time, and that was a sort of one-off gig somewhere near Times Square. But it was very much kind of in, do the gig, go.
Yeah, I think I
And
saw there's a video of you guys playing in New
well,
York.
okay. Maybe, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, there must be. And then after that, it was about 10 years before we came back, because I think it was about 2018 or something. We did a show in Las Vegas playing at a thing called the High Rollers Weekend. And then l 2 years ago, wasn't it, 23, in the autumn, we did a very brief sort of East Coast tour playing in Portland, Maine, Boston. Do that. So that, and that was a real life affirming experience, that trip, because there were lots of people. I mean, the shows were well attended, and there were lots of people that had travelled from places like California to come to all three shows. And obviously, you know, travelling California to, you know, over to Maine is like, you know, travelling from England pretty much, isn't it? You know, it's a long way. It was just lovely, you know. And there were people that have been listening to us for a long time, and you know, you could, you know, I sit in this room and kind of write songs, and then, you know, we record them, and I.
So you're saying that people came all the way from California just to see your gigs across the country?
And I was saying, you know, like we make this music, and you know, I don't know if anyone's listening to it really, unless they kind of come to a show or something, you know. And it was just great, you know, meeting these people that have been listening to us for years, you know, on another continent,
Right.
and were so into it they were willing to travel considerable distance to come and you know, see us play. I mean, it's really humbling, you know. And that's one of the things I really like about doing is that kind of connection you make with people, you know, through the music. You know, that's one of the things I really enjoy about it. I mean, on the other side, there was a guy who literally used to live about 10 miles down the road from where I live, and he now lives in Boston, and he only found out about us about just before we did that last tour. And he said, you know, I heard you know, found you on the internet, and I thought I'd come down and check you out. I can't believe you're from, you know, just up the road. So it's all those little kind of connections, you know, that you make on these
Well,
sorts of trips.
I hope you play in October when I'm there. We'll see.
Yeah, and we're coming back to the States actually in March next year.
Ooh, what
Yeah.
cities? What cities?
It's definitely Boston, definitely New York, definitely Jersey, and then one other to be decided, but probably somewhere like Portland, Maine, somewhere like that. Somewhere up
Well,
the at that end.
I'm originally from Detroit, and they love garage rock there, just to let you know.
We'd love to get around to more of America, you know. I mean, places like Detroit,
Chicago,
Chicago,
Detroit, you know, places like that, they would love your music. Now you have a new album coming out in October too.
we do. It's called
Tell
Misty
me about
Medway
that.
Magic. It's
Go
called
ahead.
Misty Medway Magic. It's coming out on the Wicked Cool label. It's coming out on the 24th of October, and it's yeah that's it. And then we're going to do some shows.
Well, how many songs are on the album, and will you have it in vinyl as well?
So we're certainly going to have it in vinyl, CD, as well as digital. I'm not entirely sure how many songs are on there. I think it's about 13, 14. That's normally what we do. you
You have
know,
quite a lot of songs on your albums, I notice.
yeah, we do short songs, don't we?
Yeah.
So
They're
you've
like
got
two
to
and a
hit.
half minutes, 3 minutes. Yeah.
I think the opening song on it is under 2 minutes, so quite pleased with that. So it's kind of a mix of, I mean, you've heard Emily Shops, so that kind of
Yeah, and
early
I'm
Who.
fake. I've heard that, the flip
That's the B
side, yeah.
side. So that kind of early, I suppose that's quite a good taster for the album, because there's lots of that kind of hooey, energetic stuff on there. But there's a couple of songs which are quite, people have said they're quite West Coast.
Pop punk, kind of, like California sound.
More like kind of birdsy, I suppose, that sort of birds sort of vibe.
Oh, that kind of 60s birds, I see.
I mean, I'll leave other people to make up their own minds on that, but that's just what people have said to us. But there's certainly, a couple of psyche sort of moments on there. And then the last song on there is maybe a little bit of a departure. It's got some unusual, by our standards, instrumentation on it, and it's very, very slow. When I originally thought about it, I imagined it being like part of a movie soundtrack sort of vibe. So it's got an old instrument called a cymbalon on it, which is what old 60s tunes it on. There's an old Michael Caine movie called The Ipcress File, and it features on that, for example. Portishead used it on one of their songs in the mid 90s. So it's got, it's just got a kind of slightly different sound to it, and a very low key, very quiet vocal on it. So it's,
So
as I say, quite different.
you're experimenting, you're kind of branching out from garage rock, just trying different other genres, I guess.
And it's just kind of, we like different types of music, so it's just the way that we approach an album, really, is I write the songs, and it's just however things come out. So if there's one on there that's a bit like a sea shanty or a folk song or something, so it's just it all comes out. I share it with the boys, and then whatever we think sounds the best goes on. It doesn't matter if it's a folky number or a punk song or a jazz number. I mean, I'm thinking about it. Yeah, there's also a song on there that's quite like sort of a Northern Soul type feel to it as well. So,
That's still quite popular over there. I see there's dances, Northern Soul dances.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, sprinkling the talcum powder on the floor, pulling some shapes. Yeah, give it a listen. See what you think. I can send you a link if you like.
I would
If you
love to. I could review it for you. I would love to hear it. I mean, since I know your whole catalog now, every time I drive in the car, that's what I put on. The Len
Oh, that's
Price
lovely.
3. Yeah, and
Thank you. No,
I've
that's really
turned
nice.
other
Thank you.
people onto it. So there's a lady in Florida r driving around, Tampa, Orlando, listening to the Len Price 3.
Love that. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I think we're about out of time, but
Yeah, certainly.
I do thank you so much for speaking with me, and that I had to speak with you because, like I said, I've been playing your music on guitar and ukulele lately and singing to it. Maybe I'll put a cover on
Yeah,
YouTube.
send us a video. That'd be great. I mean, we've had a couple of people cover our stuff and put it on YouTube, and we always like to share it.
It's
So, yeah.
your stuff is catchy. I mean, it's
Thank
just,
you.
I have such warm feelings. I think it's the whole nostalgia thing. It makes me think of my childhood, all the
Okay,
music that I grew up with, and it's authentic sounding.
Yeah, thank
It
you.
does, it's
Thank
original and it doesn't sound like covers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right, yeah. We tried to give it everything with heart. Everything is kind of delivered with, I think, what's that expression, Gloria Jones or someone said about, what comes from the heart reaches the heart. I'm not sure who said it, but I think that resonates with me. I think that's something that we've tried to put into our music,
Well, I totally feel it.
Good,
Well,
good.
thank you, Glenn, for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
And thank you so much.
Thanks for
Okay.
taking an interest in our
Alrighty.
music.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Alrighty.
Have a good
Cheers.
one.
Bye
Cheers. Bye now.
bye.
You're listening to Rock at Night.